Welcome to a special edition of this Spectator podcast. In the past few minutes, Ian Duncan-Smith has resigned from the Cabinet in protest at the disability cuts announced in the budget. In a letter to David Cameron, he writes, "I have for some time and rather reluctantly come to believe that the latest changes to benefits to the disabled and the context in which they have been made are a compromise too far," and announces that he is going to resign from the Cabinet. Well, I'm joined by Fraser Nelson now, who's going to explain why Ian Duncan-Smith has decided that now is the time to leave the government. Fraser, what happened? What led to Ian Duncan-Smith taking this decision?
Well, the budget, in short, he was dismayed not so much at the cuts to disability benefits, he knew they were coming, but in the way they were presented. What led him to resign was the juxtaposition of the cuts to disability at the same time as cuts to capital gains tax, cuts for higher rate taxpayers. He always believes that a moral thread needs to run through the government's reforms, and he thought that thread had snapped in this budget, and actually had snapped some time ago. Every single time there is a budget, there's normally a huge battle between Ian Duncan-Smith and George Osborne. The Treasury wants to come and shave working age benefits. Ian Duncan-Smith fights back, but this time he's decided he's just fed up fighting. He's lost the battle over disability benefits, and he thinks it's time that somebody else took up the fight.
But why now? Why not when the changes to employment and support allowance were put into the Welfare Reform Act, for instance? Campaigners are saying that those are actually worse than the cuts to personal independence payments that have been announced by the Chancellor this week. What made him snap?
Well, there's been a whole bunch of cuts. I mean, think how unpopular the bedroom tax was. So he stayed through all of this. But it's not as if he thinks the welfare reform agenda is nefarious, but he wants to do it in a way where you could always explain to the public that, yes, we're making these very difficult cuts, but we're doing it to save lives rather than to save money. We're trying to increase employment. We're trying to make sure that work pays. To him, there was always a separate agenda than the Treasury. The Treasury, he felt, just wanted to save money all the time, and it didn't really care who it saved money from. So the disability cuts are the straw which broke the camel's back. And it's more, I mean, let's remember that Ian Duncan-Smith has been in his job longer than almost any other equivalent work and pensions secretary, and he has achieved most of his reforms. It wasn't likely he was going to stay that much longer in the job. So to me, it's not very surprising that he stood down. Many people expected him to go after the general election. What is surprising is the way he's decided to resign. He's resigned with this letter, which is basically pointing straight at George Osborne and David Cameron, saying that he cannot morally support their cuts. Now, this is very damaging to a government which right now has got a whole bunch of people who are protesting against its cuts. Now, these people can point to David Cameron and say that even your own welfare reform secretary thinks these cuts are morally indefensible.
So what does this mean now for George Osborne and David Cameron? A cabinet minister has just declared war on the budget, basically.
Well, let's remember that we are in a time of war, of civil war, within the Conservative Party anyway. Ian Duncan-Smith is for Britain leaving the EU, as is Michael Gove. He has been fighting David Cameron and George Osborne for the last few weeks in the context of the referendum. And I suspect that when Number 10 finally wakes up to this, we're likely to hear that this was a man who's already mentally checked out of the government, who's already fighting the Prime Minister over the EU referendum, and this will probably be portrayed as a device to destabilise the government over the referendum. Now, it certainly is the case that the tensions between Ian Duncan-Smith and George Osborne, which were always great, are a lot greater as a result of the referendum. But what he says in his letter is entirely consistent with the concerns, with the niggles, with the arguments, with the fights that he's been having almost every year he's been in that job. His great reform was universal credit. He said that he wants a system that will make sure people are always better off in work, so when they move from benefits to work, they're not going to be hit by taxes that will mean they'll be better off in the dole. But year after year, the Treasury has come for this universal credit, raided it, eroded it, to the point where this new system, created at such expense and after so many years, is hardly better than the system it replaced. And I think that is what really has sapped Ian Duncan-Smith's morale, that he has devoted the last 5, perhaps 10 years of his life to creating a new system of welfare whose economic rationale has almost entirely been eroded by the salami slicing of these cuts.
So what does this mean for George Osborne? Because this is a pretty big blow to the Chancellor, not just his authority in the Treasury, but also his credibility for a leadership bid in the future, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, George Osborne's credibility has already been hit by the unravelling of yet another budget. He's spent most of today trying to row back on the disability benefit reforms, which he announced yesterday, downgrading them to an aspiration or a thought rather than a policy, which is very embarrassing for a Chancellor, because what goes in the budget document ought to be followed through and ought to be government policy. He was already weak. This will weaken him even further, because it's Ian Duncan-Smith is suggesting, in effect, that George Osborne lacks the human factor, lacks the moral dimension which he thinks you need for conservative reforms, or certainly the Treasury's policy lacks the human factor and lacks that moral dimension. It's not a personal resignation letter. He doesn't really say that George Osborne is a villain or anything like that. But by the time tomorrow's newspapers come out, you can bet it will be seen as a nuclear weapon aimed straight at the Chancellor.
What do you expect to happen next?
I expect some retaliation of sorts, not that it will really matter. Ian Duncan-Smith always knew that reforming welfare was his last job in government. He doesn't have any aspirations next. I think quite a few Conservatives will probably rally behind him, and if there is, this has made a rebellion over these disability cuts much more likely in the Commons. Already we had new MPs like Johnny Mercer was saying only today he can't square these disability cuts with his vision of conservatism. So I think this has made a Commons rebellion more likely. I can't quite see what the Treasury and Number 10 would have to gain by going after Ian Duncan-Smith now that he has resigned. They can say that this was a man who wanted to reform welfare or die trying, and either outcome would have been fine with him. They can perhaps portray him as somebody who craved crucifixion in some way. He always wanted to go out on a high point of principle, and this has simply been a suitably dramatic exit for a man who was always playing politics with high emotional stakes. So I imagine you'll have a lot of that. But I also imagine the government will from now on find it a lot harder to pursue its welfare reform agenda, given that the architect of that agenda has just walked out saying it is not morally defensible.
Well, that's all for this special edition of the Spectator podcast. We'll have more coverage throughout the night and over the weekend after this resignation. Thank you for listening.